You've landed Inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gondor.
All right, everybody. Tamara Gondor here, your host at Inside Launch Street. I'm really excited for today's podcast. Let me just say, as many of you know, we are now live streaming them on Facebook. And part of the reason we're doing that is from your request, which was, we love your podcast, but we don't want to have to wait 6 months between the time that you interview the person and the time it comes out. So we're doing them here too. And if I can catch it on Facebook, I will actually answer or get to questions if you have any as well. So this is exciting. I'm excited for this podcast, partially because, as you know, we're all about innovation. And I think one of the fields that drives innovation and customer experience and new ways of thinking and sometimes fight innovation is the sports world. And it's just such a part of our world, I think, particularly here in the US. So I'm excited to have on Fielding today. Fielding, thank you so much for joining me. How about tell the audience a little bit about you and then we'll start to dig in.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. I love being here. I love your podcast. So this is great. So I'm Fielding Jamison. I am the strategy director at a group called the Global Sports Venture Studio, and GSVS for short, because it can be a mouthful. But it is an initiative that's looking to bring together the world's leading sports organizations like Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, UEFA, Adidas, Fox Sports, Dick's Sporting Goods, Levy Restaurants as well, and the LA Dodgers. Those are just kind of a sample set of our organization. So it's bringing together those types of organizations to collaborate with each other and to frankly engage with startups and the overall sports innovation ecosystem. So it's looking, you know, we are really there to serve as their innovation partner as they set out to accomplish new goals for their organizations. And the Global Sports Venture Studio is part of RGA Ventures, which is essentially part of the larger RGA Media Group.
So my one personal question before we dig in is, what's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
Sure. I have a major sports background, played sports throughout high school and college, and now working in sports, which is great. So I always like to say a surprising fact is I actually was in the symphonic band through high school.
Sports together.
Yes, exactly. So I was like playing in the pep rallies sometimes with my like French horn and then also participating on the field. So played French horn all through high school.
Oh my gosh, that is fantastic. You know, I'm so bummed. I never did music through school. My kids do. And it bums me out that like, I really feel like I missed out by not doing that. So I love that. So I want to actually start the conversation by talking more on a cultural level first, and then we'll kind of dig into innovation a little bit. But as you and I were talking about offline, I think it would be remiss of us not to have just a conversation that puts it in the frame of where we are right now in this kind of monumental time in history with the protests and Black Lives Matter and the shift that we're really seeing in our country. And sports has such an impact on culture. So I'd love to get your perspective on, from kind of someone on the inside of sports, kind of what your take is. I mean, just this morning, I saw on the news that NASCAR banned the use of the showing, how we say it, of the Confederate flag. That's huge. Roger Goodell came out and said they were wrong about the kneeling. Like, it's kind of big. So I'd love to hear your take on that.
So I mean, I think it's amazing how we're seeing all organizations, not just in sports, really come out and be supportive of this movement and the racial injustices that have happened in our country and be honest about those and are having honest conversations. I think for me, you know, sports and media are probably the top two industries that have shaped American culture the most. And we usually talk about sports, we usually talk about sports being leaders. And for example, you know, just a couple months ago, I was on another podcast talking about, you know, look how much leadership sports showed, the sports industry showed with COVID. They were really some of the first organizations to say, you know, look, this is not right. Like, we cannot continue to play. It's affecting the safety of our players and our fans. And, you know, they took a stake in the ground with that. And unfortunately, in this scenario that we find ourselves in today, right now, a couple months later, sports haven't been leaders. And I think now they're playing a little bit of a catch up. And I'm so excited to see that. I'm excited to see that someone as powerful as Roger Goodell is coming out and saying that he made a mistake. I mean, and that takes guts to do. And I think that that's great. And the NASCAR thing, I was a little shocked by. I didn't know that that was even a thing still, that happened. But again, very glad that they're taking those steps as well. And so, you know, I think that sports, in times that they're not being the leaders, the fact that they're able to recognize where they've made mistakes and take ownership for that. I actually think that's one thing sports teaches you as a youth athlete, is it's okay to say you made a mistake. You take ownership from it. Your team is there to support you, and then you move on from it. So it'll be really interesting to see how these sports organizations continue to kind of take this moment in time to be listening, and then also to see how they are able to, you know, translate that in the next couple months into action.
Yeah, I appreciate your kind of where you're coming from and that insight around that. And I think, you know, as I was saying, I think sports really does shape our views and perceptions. It is such a big influencer in this country, whether that's football, baseball, basketball, NASCAR, whatever your sport is, right? It's a billion-dollar industry for a reason. And we all rally around it. And I'd very much like to see them really step up and not just talk about the change, but really implement it. But I do think seeing that even on TV was encouraging to me, because I know that the impact that they have, I mean, it's in the household, it's part of our conversation every single day.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're here in general to talk about innovation, but just think about kind of the digital innovations that we've seen over the past decade that have actually given voices to these athletes who are pushing their leagues. The amazing video that the NFL athletes kind of put together as a call to Roger Goodell in a time where everyone is at their homes, then there's limited, production capabilities, if you will. And for them to be able to kind of get all the tools, put that together, stream that online, have all these people access it via social media and spread the message. I mean, that's really showcasing the impact that digital innovation and innovation in general can have.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really put those two things together. I feel like we could probably spend 8 hours talking about this and probably still not have the answers, because we're not the ones in the seat of power, so to speak. But I just, like I said, I didn't want to have this conversation and not at least acknowledge the fact that there's things happening in that world. I want to kind of connect the dots with what you just said, which is, you said about innovation, right? And kind of pulling together this video. And it's so funny, because when you first came across my desk, I was like, innovation in sports, huh? Like, how does that come together? So I'd love to, like, where do those two things intersect?
Where to start? So many amazing places. I'll start maybe with, you know, what people see on TV, right? Like, just broadcast innovation in general with sports. So the idea, you know, golf is back today, which is great. So my husband's super excited. But, you know, one way that I love watching golf is the fact that they have that little tracker that, you know, once they hit the ball, you can actually kind of see where it's going. I need that in real life, because my ball goes a number of different places.
Like I do in bowling.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, just even seeing that type of technology to make it easier for viewers to be able to engage in a sport that, you know, they might not be an expert in, or football, for example, on broadcast innovation, the showing kind of where the first down line is or where the red zone is. You know, those are all innovations that have helped, you know, a lot of viewers really be able to better experience the game. And then you shift over to the game itself and just the amount of data that is now being collected from so many different sources. Artificial intelligence is being used to kind of review game footage and showcase, you know, where people should be, different types of play. you know, they are also using it a lot for athlete training and recovery, which is interesting. So, you know, a lot of athletes are using virtual reality, for example. I don't know if you saw the Lindsey Vonn documentary, but there's a part where she's kind of has a headset on. She's like going through the motions of actually being on the slope, right? And that was helping her because she actually wasn't able to ski some of those runs until she like was competing on them. And so, you know, there's so many different areas where innovation is playing a role in not only the athlete experience, the team and the experience, and then the stadium experience, right? And that's going to be really critical as we kind of come out of this COVID world of seamless entry, right? People don't want to be standing in line a lot. People want to be able to breeze through, you know, and get to their seat. And then hopefully, you know, it'd be how great would it be if this, you know, I'm going to my hometown is originally Atlanta. So I'm going to an Atlanta Falcons game. I walk in that stadium, sit down in the seat. They know that Fielding Jameson is there, that I like to have a beer when I get there. And I like to have a hot dog delivered at halftime and maybe an ice cream before I leave. Right. And so those types of personalization experiences are being enabled right now. And I think that we're going to continue to see those types of experiences really take off in the stadium, while also all of the innovation that's kind of happening and for fans and for athletes continue to grow as well.
What I'm really want us on Launch Street to pay attention to, Fielding, with what you're saying, is that the examples you're giving are across all the touch points of sports. So, right, so safety for the players, the fan experience at home in particular, right, where you can't, like, so you can see where everything is. Like, when I watch hockey, thank God for that little thing, because otherwise I have no idea where the puck is, right?
Right.
I'm a football fan, so that's my sport, but, like, that yellow line tells me everything I need to know. Otherwise, I have no idea where the ball is. So, and though you also talked about in the stadium and kind of, and really the shift now that I think our expectations as fans, which ultimately means customers for all of us, is also changing. And I do think it's really important to recognize that and to listen to that on Launch Street, because I think businesses that innovate across the business are the ones that win, and they don't just relegate innovation to a certain place. I don't know exactly. I'm going to fumble this question a little bit, but go with me for a second. When you think about sports and the priority of innovation, I have to imagine it ranks pretty high, right? They're always trying to outdo last year in some way, right? Whether that's in safety or recovery or this experience. How does that translate into investment of time, of like all of that really makes that happen? And part of the reason I ask is I think, and sport, the NFL is a great example, wildly successful. So do they need to innovate? Yeah, but you could also make the argument, why? Don't like fix what's not broken, right? So, and that's what a lot of us get stuck in. That was super rambling. So hopefully you got what I meant.
No, I think that anyone listening or to your podcast and people who've been on here before, you know, all would have kind of the same idea, which is like that. I don't know how to politely say, but you are dead in the water if you think you are safe. If you think that just because your business model is working and things are going well, that you don't need to innovate, that is not going to get you the success, the long-term success that your company, your organization, and your shareholders, frankly, might, you know, expect of you. And so I think that yes, sports continues to be a successful industry. And look, there's still some really old school sports organizations and groups that are still kind of working through what does innovation mean for them and how do you hold on to, frankly, some of that nostalgia that is associated.
People do love, right? Like you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Of course, right? And that is, I think, what's actually been really interesting for me as I transitioned a little bit from more media world into sports was how do you draw that balance between, you know, encouraging people to try new things and get them to kind of see where unlock, honestly, some of the greater future that they could have while not losing at all the past. We're not trying to get rid of the past. We're just trying to grow it and make it better.
Do you think though, I agree with you. And I just had in my head this exercise we used to do when I worked in consumer packaged goods and innovation, like new product development. It was this roots, passion, vision, needs kind of like Venn diagram. And, but what it got me thinking is, I think, especially coming out of the situation we're in now, have been for basically 2020, I'd say that the customer's needs have changed, right? So how do you think about keeping up with changing needs, and probably drastically right now? To your point about not wanting to wait in line, not only do I not want to wait in line because I'm annoyed and I don't want to spend an hour waiting in line, but also because now I don't want to be near anybody. So like, it's this kind of double whammy. How do you think about keeping up with that, those shifts?
I mean, our group has, let me just say, we've never been busier during this time, because, you know, all of our organizations are trying to figure that out. And I think that what sets you up for success in order to respond to something like this is if you've set your organization up in a way that is able to pivot and pivot quickly and get things out the door fast. And I think that we've seen the groups and the companies that have been able to do that. And those are the ones that have been super successful during those these times, and some that have been a little bit behind. Right. And so, you know, I think what's been interesting for me to see is, you know, companies that you would just never, Pepsi is a great example. I wish I could remember the exact URL, but it's something like, I think it's snacks.com, right? Mm-hmm. They're a massive, they launched a direct to consumer product in all of this, because people weren't able to like get all of the snacks that they wanted at the grocery store at the time. And so it was like, why not just, yeah, put them all at one place and then let people kind of directly access that. So again, I think that it's just been the ability to pivot quickly, to potentially get things that you've had on the back burner. Oh, we don't need, to your point earlier, we don't need to do it. So why would we do it? We don't need to. Well, now the need has come, and companies have had to respond to that. I also think what's been interesting during this time that consumers are really driving is brand loyalty kind of went out the window there for a while, right?
Yeah. I've got some words about that when you're done with your story.
You know, toilet paper, for example, you know, okay, if you're usually a Charmin customer, it doesn't matter anymore, because you can't get toilet paper anywhere. So you're going to start just buying whatever is on the shelf, mm-hmm, or you can get your hands on. And then maybe all of a sudden you're like, oh, actually this brand's fine, I'll just, you know, continue to buy this brand. And so that's also something that we've been keeping an eye on with our partners around, how do you also keep up brand loyalty during a time period like we're in?
Well, I think that's really an important point. I hadn't even really thought about it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I have tried brands I've never tried before, because that's what was available, and not just food, but just like at Target, at wherever I'm shopping, right? My loyalty to clothing went down because suddenly I don't need as much, and like I'm not even thinking about those brands. I mean, it really is amazing. How do you keep that relationship going? Here's my follow-up question to that, because I've had two experiences recently that really have frustrated me. So the first one was an extreme sports race that I was signed up for in August. Obviously, that race got canceled. What made me angry was that they then emailed me and said, we don't do refunds. So they canceled the event, which I get, right? I got that. They don't do refunds, and I could either sign up for an event in the future or get a merchandise credit. And my response back was, what merchandise am I going to get? I didn't do the event 2020. Like, what? That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And so I railed them for it, and I'm continuing to rail them for it. And I'll just say who it is, because I'm so annoyed. It's Spartan. Mm. And I've done 3 Spartans in the past, maybe 4. I can't even keep track anymore. So they have just lost my business because they couldn't get their act together to treat their customers right when in a time where I think that relationship matters even more. So, and then I've got another colleague who has the same experience with a bra company, same kind of thing, where they were like, Matt, you're gonna have to wait until the store's open. We can't do anything for you, right? So I guess, can you hear the rage in my voice? I get really frustrated because I just think, wow, this was such an opportunity to keep me as a customer, but instead you decided to not, right? You decided to take a path that wasn't smart. So I guess my question back to you is, particularly in the sports world with the events and the, like, how do you think about innovation, customer experience, and relationship in a time where we're not necessarily able, they, not me, but deliver on the goods at the same time. Like, what a tough place to be in.
Very tough place to be in. I totally hear and match your anger with someone
who have frankly hearing it from me.
Yeah, they've just mishandled, this situation that the entire world is in, right? It's not just...
I didn't just decide to not go to an event. That wasn't the situation.
Yeah. Right. It's out of our control, as it is that company's, right? But this is super important for sports, because if you think about it, you know, there's no sports on... Well, sports are just coming back, but during this time period, there were no sports on television. No one could go to any games. How do you keep people engaged? And, sports are nothing without fans. So you need to have those fans. And one thing that we talked a lot about internally was, and there was a lot written about this as well, was like, does the casual fan come back, right? Because now, to your point, your habits have changed. You're not shopping as much, maybe. We're not going to stores as much. You know, we are spending more time with our family or Zooming with our friends in a way that we're connecting with people haven't connected with in a while. I think priorities are shifting in people's life. And if you're a casual fan, are you coming back to sports, right? When sports come back, though, are you going to be there watching? And so we spent a lot of time trying to think through, not only from the usual channels like social and digital to engage fans, but how do you, do innovative things like host watch parties, and how do you give people the ability to watch games together? So if you and I are both fans of the New York Giants, and we used to go to games together and now we can't, is there a way that we can actually watch on our first screen while also, seeing each other and being able to communicate during the game? So those are types of technologies that we're looking at, that we're surfacing to our partners to not only think about, okay, we have to think about this period of time, keeping the fan engaged. And we have to think about like bringing the fan back a little bit. And frankly, to your point about the lack of customer experience, one thing that it's been nice to hear from our group companies is that they're super focused on making 2020 special. So like, if you do go to a game, it shouldn't just be the same experience. Like that'd be silly not to recognize like what's happened and what it means, honestly, for you to be there for yourself and for those athletes who are also struggling because they are going to have to play with, no fans. So
to say, I have a lot of, empathy for that. I don't think I've done not to that level, but I used to do CrossFit comps before I had to walk away from CrossFit, thanks to Greg Glassman and the direction they're taking. But doing those events without people cheering you on is not the same experience.
Absolutely not. It's very hard as an athlete to get like hyped up and excited. You even see it on TV, frankly, like it's flat. I mean, it's really flat. You can hear the echo in the stadium. And again, we're working on trying to solve some of that as well. So it is a better experience when you're watching at home, but it's a challenge. And then, it's also our job to think about, okay, yes, this is happening now. What can we see though for the future? So not just this year, but what does 2021 look like, 2022? That and encourage our partners they need to really be also thinking about that. First and foremost, though, they need to get back to playing.
There's a couple of things I just want to highlight for our community, Fielding, that you're saying that I think is really relevant to them. And one of them, I thought it earlier and we got sidetracked on other stuff. But one is, there is so much innovation in sports. And I don't think that I realized it until this conversation. And the reason I think that matters is not just because that allows me to have a better experience, but also because as a business leader, I can look at those and ask myself, well, how does that apply to my world? Like I was thinking about the yellow line, like the 10-yard line in football. And I was thinking, in our membership site, so we have this membership site, people kind of go through this journey of innovation to go from here to being an influencer of innovation. I need markers, right? I need markers that show people where they are so that you have a better experience following your own progress. So I guess I want to highlight that because I think it's important that we look at sports and not just for this fan experience, but also to go, how can I use that in my world? Because they really are leaders in a lot of ways in innovation. I just, I guess I was just too busy enjoying the games that I didn't even notice it.
That's probably the best type of innovation, right? Is that you don't even realize it. You know, I think it was Steve Jobs who said, like, you have to tell the consumer what they want, right? Yeah. Like, they don't know what they want. They didn't know that they wanted a phone that had a touchpad that can unlock with their face and do all of these things, because
I didn't know doing this into my phone would be something I would learn to do to try to unlock the face.
They don't know what's possible. And so I think that, you know, the best type of innovation is that type that where you just said, I've just been enjoying this amazing game and didn't really realize kind of everything that went about it, around it.
No, I think for all of us listening to this podcast, you know, I don't know how many we have in the sports world. I have to imagine it's not that many. So I think there's a huge opportunity to really pay attention to, like, oh, this thing that I enjoy leisurely actually could give me some value in my business world or whatever it is that I do for a living. Especially if you provide a service in some ways, because I think sports is phenomenal, the 360 kind of experience. And I will say, anyone who knows me well knows I'm a diehard Raiders fan. I bleed silver and black. So I'm very much looking forward to the new stadium. Like, I expect some serious innovation in that place. So just for all you people in the Raiders world.
Raiders are listening. Yeah, we can help you with that. So
no, that's right. Yeah, you should hire a building and then we can, like, I will have a better experience when I go to the game.
Exactly. Games.
I want to ask you a question, though, that I know is percolating in some people's minds. It is in mine, too, which is, you know, moving forward is great. To your point, not everybody even knows what they want. And you've got to kind of paint a vision of the future, not where you are now. And that really involves changing people's minds. How do you think about that? How do you go about that?
I usually like to think about it as opening people's minds versus changing them. And I'll tell you kind of why. I think that it's your job as an innovator to show people and to demonstrate kind of the possibilities if they look to something new and they're looking to innovate in a certain way. So storytelling is critical to innovation, frankly. I think that a lot of innovation rides on someone's ability to be able to tell a story, to be able to paint a picture for people to really imagine what it is that you're selling them. And I always say that, you know, now I do have clients now in this role, but previously I was at Comcast NBC Universal in, you know, working internally, but I always said I'm in sales because I have to go sell someone on new technology that they've never heard of before, let alone understand what it does. And you have to be able to kind of show that vision and hopefully get people to open their minds to seeing that. And the reason I like to use open minds versus change minds is I actually am also a believer in there's only so many ways that you can present something that, frankly, you might not be changing someone's mind. And they might just be set on a no. And I think the beauty of innovation is the fact that people who are in innovation can't hear no, because if they heard no, then they would, you know, not really be able to, they would never go forward. We hear no all the time, right? And so, I think that if you hear a no and you continue to hear a no, find another way, find another path, find another person. Find your way to that yes.
You know, the other thing I never thought about that change versus open, it reminds me of, I often talk about, instead of getting uncomfortable, just expanding your comfort zone, because I don't know why you'd get uncomfortable. Like, that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that. And really all that happens when you get uncomfortable is you expand what you're comfortable with, right? But the thing that's interesting to me about the kind of open versus change is I think that really does shift how you go about communicating. Like, when I think of changing people's mind, it feels very forceful. It feels like I'm pushing it on you. And that's, I think, part of the reason why we don't change people's minds is because we're pushing our brilliance onto people and nobody likes that, right? We're not allowing for space for them to be a part of the conversation and a part of the idea or the innovation. Where opening feels like I just see my whole approach changing to be more open or trying to open up other people. And then hopefully, at least from my view, that would mean more engagement from the people I'm talking to as well.
Right.
So I want to ask you one other question about innovation, and then I want to kind of unfortunately have to wrap it up, although I could probably ask you 100 other questions. My next question is, when you think about the resistors to change and innovation, we've kind of touched on a few, like success, frankly, right? Like, why fix if it's not broken, or this is working, let's keep doing it. In your world in sports, what type of resistors do you see? And then I guess more specifically, or more importantly, how do you actually work to overcome them?
Interesting question. You know, I think that one thing, sports people tend to actually be really excited by change, mm-hmm. and new things and trying new things and being, and frankly, back to that kind of leadership mentality, like they want to be the first. They want to be the first. They want to be the best. But a lot of times they're actually inhibited by things that everybody in corporations around the world and anyone who works in innovation knows well, which is things like budget, bottom line. You know, being able to like show value quickly, that can be really difficult in innovation because frankly, sometimes you can implement something and not see those results for years. Or you could be working with a small startup that again, takes years to actually, you know, bear fruit. And so I think that there's some resistance there of like, oh, that's really like, it'd be cool to do something, but like, we really just need to like focus all of our dollars on our ad spend or, you know, our social media strategy or things that, again, are important. Right. But that doesn't mean that they are more important necessarily than innovation. And then I guess the other thing is some of the people who, as we talked about, sports is an old time industry. And so there are people who are a little bit resistant to change. And, you know, they don't want to see, you know, the long lines go away to buy their favorite hot dog because, you know, that's part of the experience.
Right. No, by the way, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's a simplified example, right? But, you know, there are, I think some people that have that mentality. I also will say, just to kind of, I even tie it back to the beginning of this conversation, there is a lack of diversity in sports. And frankly in sports leadership, so on the organizational side, I mean, and I think that can be an inhibitor to innovation, frankly. I think that you need to have people of all different genders, of all different races, of all different religions, whatever it is, to really actually innovate in a way that is going to be kind of best for everybody involved. And so I think that sports can be a little bit in a white male echo chamber that, hopefully, you know, we are here to shake up a little bit and, you know, you can start to look at people of all different backgrounds can start to bring different values and ideas to that organization.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I think, A, it's important for humanity that we have teams that are more diverse and reflective of the world that we're in and not an echo chamber. And B, teams that come from diversity of thinking on a cognitive level do better. So they are stronger teams, people are happier, they innovate more, the whole organization's better. So I think that there's a lot of personal, human, and business reasons why they need to shift in that way. I wanted to ask you a question about startups, because you mentioned it a few times. I didn't want to kind of breeze past that before we close. And I think you talk about, right, that startups are important in sports and in innovation. What's the connection there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our whole premise is really around working with startups. And I think it's not just connection with sports, it's connection to any organization, which is startups give you the ability to move fast. Mm-hmm. And startups usually are doing one thing really, really well. And if you think about, if you're able to plug that one thing into your larger machine and you're able to learn together, that's where we think the magic happens. And I personally have always found myself in corporate innovation with this balance of working with startups because, you know, corporations move slowly. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And so I think that if you look out, you got to get outside your four walls. You got to see what's happening. Startups are always on the cutting edge. They're like the first place you should go to look at what's coming next. Look at what VCs are investing in this year in order to see, okay, these are the types of places that we need to be thinking about and innovating in. And startups really give you that ability. Also, I have seen truly startups like give like a breath of life into employees at corporations who are able to kind of, again, just think freely. And startups, you know, it's amazing. You can work with them and go, you know, it'd be really cool if your product did this. And then the next day it does. Yeah. Right.
I want to ask you a question about speed, though, because I agree with you. I've worked on both the startup and the corporate side, and I run a small business. So I know how nimble and fast we get to be because we're a small team. We're like, we're all in the, you know, grid of it together. It's easier. And frankly, the decision making is, you know, a party of one at the end of the day. I mean, I'm very inclusive, but really, right, there isn't a million layers that we have to go through. Right. My team comes to me and says, we need to shift. I think about it. We do it. Like, it's pretty simple, right? But here's the thing that I've seen in the last 4 months or since COVID started, right, is industries and organizations who thought they couldn't shift have done it faster than they ever thought possible. So you mentioned about, was it snacks.com in the beginning? And I will tell you, I've got a very good friend in education here in Colorado, and they have been trying to find more digital platforms to help with the learning experience. It has taken them years and years of battle to even get agreement to consider it, and then more years to even play with stuff but never do anything because the bureaucracy is too big, the need wasn't there. I mean, fill in the blank, right? And then this all hit, we're all homeschooling, and they made a shift in 8 days to get some stuff online. Now, was it perfect? No, but it showed me that we kind of constantly think it takes us so much more than it really has to. And we need that fire to actually do it, you know?
I could not agree with you more. Corporations don't necessarily move slowly because they have to. Yeah. I think there's just a lot of things on their plate. And it shouldn't take a pandemic to push somebody to try something new. But I also think that corporations felt more at ease to take that leap of faith into something new because customers were forgiving during this time because they understood that everybody was trying. They're trying. We're all out here doing our best right now.
Just really quickly, I have to say, I'm really glad you said that because one of the things that I've been talking about in my membership with my everyday innovators of the site is, look, you have more permission to make mistakes now than you ever have. I'm not saying you should be sloppy, but I'm saying that we're all trying to figure it out together and you actually have room to grow and change in a way that you've never had before. So I'm glad I'm not speaking in an echo chamber about that. And that's what you're seeing too.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. And I think we're seeing, you know, seeing that happen as people are kind of willing, as you said, that digital learning, you know, it wasn't perfect. Things weren't great, but they got it off the ground and they were able to pivot quickly because the whole company got behind it. Right. And so when you're able to get the whole company behind something, it can be really powerful. The problem with innovation is, or the problem that, you know, people face with innovation often is it starts off kind of smaller because it's not a core product yet. Yeah. Right. Right. And so, you know, you have to get people excited and working on things. And I think that's where you see these major tech companies starting to win because they do put a lot of money and human capital behind different ideas that might fail. Mm-hmm. And if they walk away, they fail quick and they walk away. And it was something that we talked a lot about my previous role about failing fast. And I've sat with a lot of other corporate innovators and we've talked about, you know, you talk about failing fast. It's actually very difficult to get your organization to truly implement that and agree to that in a public way.
Let me ask you a question about that. Because sometimes I feel like things like that become catchphrases that don't mean anything. In fact, fatigue your teams because they've heard it over and over again. So here's my question to you is, which is the tough part? Is it the failing or is it the fast? Or is it both? Because they're not actually the same thing, you know?
I agree. I think actually it is the failing. It is the being able to accept that you failed. Being a big organization, I think it's much easier for a startup or small organization. They can quickly throw something up. If it doesn't work, take it down, move on. When you are a publicly traded company and you're a Fortune 500 company and you've got shareholders to think about and you've got, frankly, hundreds of thousands of employees to think about if you lose money and that sort of thing. Look, I'm not saying it's an easy decision. It's not. But I do think that to me, what is intimidating to people is actually the failure.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very easy to say and not easy to live up to doing that. Like, I think as leaders, we often say we're okay with failure. We want you to take risks. it's okay to fail here, but it's really not. The consequences and the rewards for the outcomes are, it's like Russian roulette. So, you know, nobody wants to try. And I do think the fast does play a role, because if they're not quick, the failures become bigger and bigger because they're putting too much time and effort into it versus testing, figuring it out, testing, right? So the longer you wait, the bigger the consequences actually become.
That is very true. There's definitely a balance there for sure. There are things that I feel like have been pulled too quickly sometimes. I'm like, you barely gave it a chance, right?
Fail.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. God, it's such a great conversation. It's so interesting. I know we have to close out. So before we go, where can people go to connect with you?
My LinkedIn. Please feel free to connect with me personally on there. If you're interested in the Global Sports Venture Studio, it's just globalsportsventurestudio.com. And you can scroll to the bottom. There's a little kind of join us section. Feel free to drop us a line there.
So this is a random question, but do you only work with sports groups? And here's why I'm asking. I feel like anyone in a heavily experiential world, which frankly is all of us, but events, customers, like a big experience service world, could benefit from, you know, that's like complementary to sports, right? But could benefit from that industry and your experience in that world, because I think in some ways sports does it way better than everybody else.
Yeah. We agree. Sports does do it well. We're part of a larger team, RGA Ventures. We work with everybody. We've worked with kind of every sector. I could probably name you one of our clients there. And so to answer your question, we are very open to working with everybody in innovation, and specifically sharing the learnings that we have kind of across the different studios that we have. We have a sports one. We also have a data one that recently launched that's super interesting. And so we kind of share all of those learnings across our clients.
Awesome. This has been so great. What's your final piece of advice for all of us on Launch Street?
My final piece of advice is just keep going, keep pushing, believe in your gut instinct. And if you hear no, just find another way.
I love that. I just always think of it as a brick wall. And I'm like, well, I'll just go around it. That's fine. Like, you can't go on forever.
Absolutely. I like that.
Fielding, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great conversation. And I just, like I said, I think listen with an open mind. There's a lot of nuggets of wisdom and how to innovate in all of our businesses.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.